Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. We are a two-team booth here today, the two Tims, Priester and O'Malley, recapping Notre Dame's very successful recruiting finish. Six guys on the last day, coupled with the other 21 signed. And Tim, you know, I did the report card. I don't know how you feel about the grades here. I still look at the offensive line, and you kind of expect a little bit more. I think Jarrett Patterson's is a pretty big time player, and I've liked John Dirksen since the very beginning. But you know, I think that's the one weakness on the offensive side, and as usual, the one weakness on the defensive side is defensive end. But everywhere else, including defensive tackle, I think they did a really, really nice job.
That's, for me, one of the two most important all the time, defensive tackle.
No doubt.
And at this cycle, they needed a quarterback, I think, too. So there's the other. Yeah, I don't think, I guess we said before the podcast, I don't see it as a typical Notre Dame offensive line haul. And that, I don't think that's arguable. But their offensive line hauls are usually otherworldly, at least in terms of rankings coming in. And they usually hit. On half of them. Now they have to hit on two of the three. That's how you have to hit on two of the four, and you don't have the guarantee. Is that the best way to say it? I guess Patterson's the closest to the guarantee.
Yeah,
sometimes
your
guarantee,
really like
you get Nelson and Bars in a class, and you know Nelson's going to be really good. You figure Bars is going to be good, and then you got to hit on one more.
Yeah, although you know, I didn't realize they were projecting Luke Jones for center or guard, which I think that gives him a better chance to be successful.
Yeah.
A really big body, doesn't have to work in space as much.
And to be fair, when Trevor Rulon came in, we would have looked at that and been like, that's the throw-in, and they like him so much now going to his senior year, he's going to be a two-year guy.
Still hasn't contributed, but
no,
but yeah.
He's a solid backup.
Yeah,
though.
No doubt. He's in the running. But, you know, I mean, from a wide receiver standpoint, I mean, I don't know how you can do much better than that. I think we all love Kevin Austin. Braden Lindsey, I don't understand what the worry is about size, because I just think he's a football player, which he proved on the defensive side of the ball as well as the offensive. And Lawrence Keyes, who I think I said this a couple weeks ago, his ability to stop on a dime and make a cut on a route is just off the chart.
You and I really like Keyes. I think if you look at everybody that covers Notre Dame, we're going to be the two highest on them. So we'll have that going into the next 4 years. I'm sure as soon as he... second on the depth chart in August will be called the carpet for that one. But no, I feel the same way about Keyes. The class, I know other people have talked about it. It's hard to... this is the best wide receiver group they brought in.
Yeah.
It's outstanding. You know, the Fuller, Robinson, Hunter, Onwalu one was really good too, actually. That was Onwalu was kind of the... He was a wide receiver. He started out as a wide receiver at Notre Dame. He played a whole year as a wide receiver. That was a good one. But this one, I like this. We didn't know Fuller would be that good. So this star power...
I was very high on Fuller, but I didn't expect him to be.
Yeah. I liked his ball skills more than anything else. So
I wasn't that high on Will Fuller.
I didn't know he was the fastest guy with a ball in college football.
You know, I rated Phil Jurkovec fourth out of 27, and some people were surprised at that. And I also gave it the quarterback position an A and not an A+, and some people raised their eyebrows at that. And I just a couple things. One. I'm not going to completely trust a quarterback until I see him throw against college coverages.
Don't ever give an A+ a quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's number one. Number two, he went to the, I believe it was U.S. Army All-American game and struggled all week. If you're an A+, you shouldn't be struggling against the best of the best. Having said all that, I mean, I love the kid. He's extremely, extremely talented, very athletic. You know, I think he's going to be a very good quarterback for Notre Dame, but that was just what went into my thinking when I rated him fourth in the class and gave the position an A.
I had him second behind Austin and just ahead of Shane Simon, actually, as number three. That was, I think you feel the same way most people do about him. It's just there's no such thing as a slam dunk message. And not finished, there's more finished products, too. It's not like he's a finished
product. And you can probably say that about every position, a wide receiver. You don't know how he's going to adjust to coverages, right?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Kevin Austin looks awfully good on film, but he's also way better than everybody guarding
him. Yes.
And
yeah.
He looks really good on film, though, Tim. It's a Michael Floyd look.
Did you know I said that? I said a more athletic Michael Floyd?
It runs like him, like he's like barreling. Does that make sense? But really fast?
Yeah.
I'm not saying he labors to run in any way. It just looks like he is... He, like, It looks like he's struggling to run, but he's not.
Yeah.
He just looks like he's putting all his energy into it.
No, he's a great player. I wasn't true to myself. I said all along I was going to pick Derek Allen number one, and I picked him number two. He's certainly number one on defense.
I had Shane Simon, the highest defender. I thought the fit right away was good for him, too.
Yeah, I had him six. I mean, that's not low, but I probably should have had him higher.
People ask these questions. We do it. Both Tim and I, for sure, and I'm sure Pete, we did it for their careers, the ratings.
Yes, to clarify, for example, I'm certainly not saying that I had Tariq Bracey 15th. I'm not saying he's going to make an impact as a freshman, because he probably won't. He's not strong enough, but we are picking by career.
So did you? When I saw a guy like Simon, I also think of the Rover, and I thought of his chances there.
Yeah,
I mean, whereas if Drew Tranquil was a sophomore superstar Rover, I might have dropped Shane Simon more. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think we take all those things into consideration, because realistically, think about this. I had a wide receiver, Lindsey third, a quarterback, Jerkovic fourth, a linebacker, Lamb fifth. Now, how do you really compare, you know, a wide receiver with a linebacker? And so, I mean, it's very subjective. But yeah, I think you try to take all those things into consideration. And with Shane Simon, everybody loves the maturity of the kid, and you take that in consideration,
We have to take that in consideration. That's the underrated part when everybody's looking at these. And Derek Allen's maturity, too, I think, is something we all consider.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. And then you hear Todd Light talk about him, too, and it really emphasizes it. I don't know what I'm missing on J-Man Franklin. I have number eight. I don't think anybody else had him that high. Still listed as a three-star. What am I missing? Why isn't he a four-star?
We're all pulling for you. why is Tremble a three-star?
Well, because he was hurt as a junior. And I asked that. Brian Kelly said that. And I get that part. But I still think that his performance the other answer is because not everybody can be a four-star.
That's a great point.
I say that all the time. And I realize that you have to draw a line somewhere. And I didn't look at every tight end in the country, and I don't know if the tight end ahead of him, you know, I didn't see his film, so it's all subjective. And that, you know, frankly, that's the fun part of it, that we can have, we can say, you know what, these are the three stars that I think are underrated. Franklin's at the top of my list,
and these stars won't matter as much in 3 years when they're just football players, but they do matter way down the road when I do a recap of classes.
Yes.
That's a fun exercise
which you'll be all caught up in a couple days when you go through all the classes. But yeah, so I mean, you know, great job. Ended up, I mean, to get Noah Boykin on signing day, you know, was a bit miraculous, because and I thought it was interesting that Brian Kelly, you guys laughed at me last week, and when I was clumsily trying to say that Noah Boykin didn't project well to Notre Dame, Brian Kelly said it much more eloquently than I did, but he said it. But the interesting thing, and I don't know if you saw this, that Brian Kelly ended up saying they were sold once the admissions department was sold on him. And having spent a little bit of time in the admissions department way back when I was a student at Notre Dame, if anybody knows whether a guy can project, a guy or a girl can project to Notre Dame, it's the admissions department.
Yeah, I was shocked when he joined the class, honestly, just from listening to Tom and Kevin. And they were on top of everything. I think they were a little bit surprised when it all came through, just being told that he wasn't.
Well, it was told. It was mass confusion, because Notre Dame thought it was going to be Virginia, and Florida was mentioned all along. Everybody was surprised. I think the Notre Dame coaching staff, maybe other than Todd Light, who pushed until the final second, was really surprised by it.
But, yeah, it's rounds out defensive backs again. That, boy, this is what they needed in this haul, really. It is.
Wow, one, two, three, four, six. Is it six?
With six Wilkins, yeah.
Yeah.
And you and I both like Wilkins more, his future at corner.
Is that a definite move?
Who said they were going to do that? It was brought up. It seems like an odd one for me.
With the receivers that they signed, I don't see the reason to move Joe Wilkins to offense. I'm trying to remember if I saw film of him on offense. I'm not sure that I did. I loved him at corner because of his size and his reach. So we'll see about that. But love what they did in the defensive secondary. And the coaches continue to speak very, very, very highly of Paul Moala. So we'll see what happens with him as well.
So next, probably consider instant impacts. Now, the guys here in the spring,
yeah,
you get a little bit of leg up, but really, I mean, I think with Jack Lamb here and with the position not open, but not closed at Buck linebacker, because I think the Buck linebacker, we talked about this last time, is going not to be decided by Drew Tranquil, but decided by the other Rovers. Can they afford not to have Drew Tranquil, who has that position down pat at Rover? And part of that is who can play inside next to Tavon Coney. If Jack Lamb proves he can do that in a part-time role, it opens up some options.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think they pretty much have their sights set on Tranquil playing Buck, or at least starting the spring at Buck. But again, like offensive line, you put your five best guys out there, you're going to put your three best linebackers out there. And certainly, you know, Tranquil is All-American caliber Rover. And probably Simon's not very good.
Simon's not here, which if it's going to be Bilal against Owusu Koramoa, that's a good spring matchup. It'd be nice to throw Shane Simon in that mix.
Yeah.
It all depends on how he takes to the position, yeah, of course, and the teaching of it.
My interest is piqued by all the things that Mike Elston said about Justin Adamalola and about the chip on his shoulder. And, you know, that's an overused phrase, I guess, cliche. But here's a kid that I think has really improved his senior year. They need defensive ends. I'm not sure that he's in a position to crack the lineup or anything like that. But I'm interested to see if he actually becomes the type of player that he himself thinks he can be.
I guess he has a kind of a year and a half window to go against Ogundeji and some of the other guys that aren't in. And of course, Jay Hayes will be gone after next year, but that opens it up. But no, this year, I kind of like a Hayes Kareem, strong side defensive end, and then at drop end, Dalen Hayes Okorah. I like where they are right now.
I think they're well positioned, and Hayes is, I think Brian Kelly said it the other day, is cross training, will cross train at three technique. So,
podcast can talk about that for three more years, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't talked about that. We haven't talked about that enough. But, let's see, maybe the last position we haven't really talked about here right now is running back. I don't disagree that Jameer Smith and Sebo Flemister are three star running backs. I think that's what they should be ranked, because again, they can't all be four star running backs. But I do think that there's quite a bit of ability there. And we'll get to see Jameer Smith a little bit this spring. And then Flemister's senior film was really, really dynamic. So I gave that a B-. Somebody said, you know, that somebody always says, I wish I had Priester as a professor. Because they didn't think Jameer Smith and Flemister deserved a B-. But yeah, if you just go by star rating, I get it. But if you watch their film, you know, it was a toss-up between C+ and B-. It doesn't really matter what the hell I marked them down at. But I thought that they were worthy of that based upon the way they played their senior seasons.
I was surprised by Flemister's film. I really liked it. I think he has the qualities you want in a college running back. It doesn't matter if he doesn't have great breakaway speed. I don't want to say it's completely overrated breakaway speed, because, boy, it's nice when they finish off those runs. But toughness and vision is underrated at the position in college, too.
I agree. I mean, you know, Notre Dame had a whole bunch of big runs and big plays last year, and that's the exception to the rule. It doesn't normally work out that way. I want to see a guy hit the hole. If he can hit the gap and get through that, then everything after that is bonus, right?
Yeah. That's how they used to teach it. Yeah. The first 4 yards are mine, the rest is yours.
Right,
that's what you get to see.
So I like those two. I'm not saying that they're going to be stars. I'm not even saying that either one of them is ever going to be a starter for Notre Dame. But I'm open-minded about them as they come in, especially Jameer Smith being here this spring.
Do you remember Reggie Brooks's comment about that after his senior year? He said, it took me a long time to learn the mantra at Notre Dame is the first 4 yards belong to me. And by me, he means the coaches. You better do what it is, and then the next four are all up to you.
Well,
no such thing as the first four being up to you.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I saw Reggie over the weekend with the 40th anniversary of basketball, and I can vouch for that being the case with Reggie Brooks, because, I mean, he struggled early in his career at Notre Dame. He was playing cornerback for a while there. But, you know, that was one guy, though, once he got those first 4 yards... You knew that he was capable of getting a whole bunch more.
The next 70 belonged to him.
Yeah, the next 70 belonged to him.
That was nice about it.
Exactly. Position changes. There's been a lot of speculation about what they're going to do at running back. I think it's I think it's a little overblown because with Jameer Smith being there this spring, they have three in the spring.
Plus
Mick Asaph will walk on, will move over there. And then you'll have Flemister in the fall. So you have four scholarship running backs. You have Asaph. You probably have another walk-on or two that isn't coming to mind or will be playing this fall. How many more do you need? I mean, maybe one more. I mean, you'd probably like to have five scholarship running backs, right?
You want five when one's always hurt.
Yeah, and I get that. I get that. And maybe Tony Jones is always hurt, too, right. So it could be two. So I get the need there. I just don't...
Is it an impact move, though, is what you're saying? Like, what is the move? If it's just for... Is it a guy you're grooming to be able to be a running back against Vanderbilt in September? Or is it just a move because you need practice reps? Because a move you need practice reps.
It'll be the latter because we know who the front runners are. And I'm going to jump into one of our questions just so we can talk about this now from Wash ND about who's more likely to move to running back, Nick Coleman or Dante Vaughn.
Dante Vaughn to
safety. I'm sorry. Yeah. I think I said this in a previous podcast. If you're Nick Coleman, you were a starter last year at safety. Will you move to running back so you can be the number five running back? I mean, who's going to do that? You can't do that to a kid. I realize that coaches are coaches and they're in charge and what they say goes, but you can't do that, especially to a senior.
I guess unless you're moving him now, you're moving him in the spring with the actual thought that he could audition to be a number two running back because they don't trust number one or number two. That's the only way. But you're right. If you're saying we want depth at running back, but you're not probably competing for the job, then it's tough to ask your starting safety, who might not be your starting safety. But he has a shot to be at the beginning of the year.
He does have a shot. Yeah, I mean, he's the most experienced safety they have right now.
And he knows what's going on back there. He just wasn't making plays. But let's say Derek Allen and Houston Griffith don't come in and set the world on fire, you might be going with your senior two-year starter at safety. So that's the question. Does he use the spring to find out if he can compete at it? Maybe he doesn't need the whole spring to keep working, right?
I think him getting the reps at safety are too important to take that chance. So, I don't know. Brian Kelly suggested that they were still working on that or they had some ideas that he didn't want to share with the public. My first reaction to that was that was just a little bit overblown and he was just saying words because he said a lot of...
That's a long day.
If you were there or if you read the transcript, there's just a lot of words being said, which coaches sometimes just say words. And so I'm not sure. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have an idea about somebody that we don't know. Coleman seems... You know, if he were a sophomore, I get it. He's a senior. He's in his last year of eligibility. Am I correct? Yeah. So, you know, there's... I guess you could frame it like, hey, man, we don't know who our running back's going to be. These other two guys couldn't stay on the field. Maybe you can be our running back. And he was... I liked him as a running back
from my high school. As an offensive player, better.
I did. I did, too. But that remains to be seen, and that'll be a question that we will ask 100 times between now and the start of spring.
Two-game winning streak in basketball. It was crucial because without it, they would be done and we wouldn't bother talking about tonight's game. They would have lost one of these two at home. Listen, if they win this game, you and I agree, they're back on the bubble.
They play North Carolina tonight.
Yes, at North Carolina. North Carolina is in game three in 5 days. The only team in the ACC to do that this year and the first time North Carolina's program, because, you know, they get to pick some stuff to do in life, has done it since 1980.
I can't believe... A, that they're doing it to North Carolina.
Right, that's why they haven't done it since 1980.
And B, that it's necessary to make North Carolina play Duke at home on Thursday, at NC State on Saturday, and at home against Notre Dame on Monday.
Emotionally, it's going to be hard for Carolina to be as up for this one.
No doubt. They
just played their two biggest rivals and beat them. Physically, also hard. I will point out they didn't travel. This is kind of like playing a tournament situation. They went 30 minutes north to Raleigh. That was it. So it's a little better than going, say, to fly up to Boston or something to play and come back. But emotionally, it's going to be hard because you beat Duke and North Carolina State. And North Carolina State was a revenge rematch win after they beat you in Carolina a couple weeks ago. So, look, they have plenty of players. It's not like Notre Dame has them completely ripe for the picking.
Right.
But this is the best time to possibly catch North Carolina when you're Notre Dame and you absolutely need a real road win. This road win counts so much more than just beating Boston College on the road. at the end of the year when you're adding things up.
I agree, and I went back and forth a little bit with one of our subscribers in a thread, not really back and forth. He said something, I responded, he responded. But, you know, his the notion that if Notre Dame can go 9-9, they're in, and that's why I agree with your point that, you know, you're better off. Well, I guess
neither is ideal to lose.
This goes without saying. Winning at North Carolina is more important than winning at BC. There's more to be. Yeah, there's more to be taken from it. If you lose at BC, it's like, okay, you lost a road game. If you win at UNC, that's a real feather in your hat. And frankly, now that we look at
your best win of the year,
it's your best win of the year. And you go. I mean, what are their big wins this year? They won at Wichita State in November, they beat Wichita State in Hawaii in November.
And North Carolina State was a good win in the end because they'll have a good record and they beat everybody. North Carolina State beats everyone they play.
But we know they didn't have their point guard and it was at Notre Dame, and so they beat them by 30. But I mean, you lost to Indiana, a game you should have won when you were at full strength. You got hammered by Michigan State.
Ball State's going to linger.
Ball State, you lost at home.
Yeah, they're not a lock at 9-9. I will say that 9-9 Notre Dame in 2018 is a world of difference than 9-9 or 9-7 even Notre Dame 10 years ago when they had no standing in college basketball and didn't deserve one. They are looked upon as a program now, and the committee will see Bonzi Colson coming back, Notre Dame making it to 9-9. In the ACC, they'll be middle of the pack. Wake Forest made it last year at 9-9. Now, teams cannot go at 10-8. Syracuse didn't go at 10-8.
Yeah.
Though I think that was punitive because they wanted to keep punishing Jim Boeheim.
Seems like
bit.
It happens to Syracuse
yeah,
a lot.
It does happen to Syracuse. That's what happens when you don't travel outside of Syracuse to play games. But
now it's a huge game for Notre Dame. I know, you know, being in the locker room after the game Saturday, I mean, they feel really good. Matt Farrell feels really good. He's healthy. Bonzi Colson is close to coming back. We'll talk about that in a second, but you know, I think they have a shot, and I think you're right, Tim. Emotionally, North Carolina, you can't get up for 3 games in 5 days when you just played your rivals.
No, but they have. I did a pretty detailed preview on this one because Tim and I have both seen North Carolina more than any other basketball team in the history of the world other than Notre Dame. It's over the last 4 years. It's I don't know how many either scouting them for the Notre Dame game or actually watching them play Notre Dame. And you catch every Notre Dame or North Carolina.
I know their substitution pattern.
Yeah, they're playing better. They're once again the secondary break, and that's not just, you know, turnover fast breaks. They are running after made shots right now because that's how confident they are in that attack, and that is something Notre Dame's gonna.
I would rather that they were the typical North Carolina team with their bigs actually than that.
Yeah. Kind of depends on their legs probably and their level of focus. I will say, I mean, Notre Dame, they've beat Notre Dame 4 in a row. So these guys necessarily aren't in that Notre Dame beat us 3 in a row stage anymore. Some of these guys weren't around for that. It's a super tough matchup. I think we took Notre Dame to keep it close and lose by 4 at the end, which would be disheartening for them going to Boston College. That's a hard thing to regroup from. The line's 9.5. I think Notre Dame's going to play well tonight. It's just, you got to close out Carolina at Carolina, and they do have Luke May, who's an All-American candidate and the reigning most valuable player of the NCAA tournament on their team to close out at home.
Yeah, but the players are human, and they're looking at the schedule like we are too, and they're saying to themselves, you know, like right now at this moment, they're you know, they're in line with beating North Carolina and they're confident, but after they lose or if they lose afterwards, they're going to know that, hey, if we can win our last two home games, if we can win a Wake Forest and Boston College, we're going to be 9-9. So it's there. They realize that, but this is a big game and it's a huge opportunity. Now, I did want to, before we finish the segment, ooh, it's running long, isn't it, Jack?
It is.
You want me to talk about Kenny Williams jumping out for a while, Jack?
I want to talk Bonzi Colson. I came to find out over the weekend is whether he shared this with Mike Bray and the coaching staff or not, is thinking about returning for February 24th at Wake Forest. That would be huge because that's a game that they have to win. Then they have Pittsburgh at home, which they would probably win with or without
Colson
Bonzi
and Farrell.
Colson. Yeah. And then at Virginia, they're not going to win that game with, who'd you say?
Jaren Grant.
Jaren Grant.
that's not a win, but that's okay. You can lose that game.
So he's looking at that. I believe, if I remember correctly, I know that they took an x-ray the beginning of last week. It was fine. They're going to take another one the beginning of this week. And if they were confident in it, they would look at allowing him to start practice so that let's see, today is the today's the 13th, so that he could start the following week in preparation for Miami and Wake Forest.
And he can be not just a guy coming back for the ACC tournament, I think might be the most important thing here. Give you a few minutes to play. His second game back is going to be, I would assume, would be taxing on his body. So the key is you get him in the ACC tournament, win an ACC tournament game after going 9-9, hopefully, and then the committee sees you have an All-American back on your team after you fought through the season.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like the whole idea, he shouldn't play against Virginia because they're not going to win anyway. Well, if he's going to be ready for the ACC tournament,
get him out there a little
bit.
And
if he is physically prepared to play that game, then you play him. Maybe you limit his minutes. You know, you don't put him in high leverage situations per se, but, you know, we'll see. Anyway, I just want to throw that about Wake Forest. I'm not saying it's going to happen. The last guy that would allow it to happen if they weren't 100% certain that he would avoid injury again just by playing is Mike Bray. So, we'll see what happens, but tonight, big opportunity against North Carolina. Okay. We'll be back for segment two with questions. Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. We start with a question from Not Jay Tafel. A hypothetical question. If Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell had stayed healthy, what would Notre Dame's record be right now?
You know, you and I both picked Notre Dame to be 10-8 with Colson, and I don't think we're that far off. I think Notre Dame would be about 7-5 right now, and you could argue 8-4. I know they could have beaten Louisville and North Carolina without Colson. I think they would have gotten one of those for sure at home in those back-to-back games. Mm-hmm. I don't think you just can say they're going to beat those teams because of it, though. They might not have stolen Syracuse as a desperate team with Colson in there. The ebb and flow of a basketball season doesn't lend itself to this. I think the question is good because they're 12 games in. They would not be 10-2. They're not that type of team. So I would put it in the generously 8-4 range.
No, they're not. They wouldn't be that good. But you know, and you look at, I mean, the flow of their offense is better without Colson, or it has been. I'm not saying it's more productive, but I mean the actual flow of their offense, especially that first game was at the first game when Farrell didn't play.
Yeah.
You know, when they made a concerted effort to be really, really quick and efficient and move offensively. You can always hear Mike Bray yelling move.
I think 7-5 is fair.
Yeah, Carolina's, I think 7-5. And I'm not, look, I'm not saying that they're better off with Colson. I'm just saying that their offense flows a little bit more quickly when he's not in there.
It'd be nice to get him back. This is not going to be a problem getting Colson back in, though, a healthy Colson, like it was with Herren Goody. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but he coming back stopped that team, unfortunately, from going as far as it could in the tournament. That would not be the case with Colson. They need him. But for me to say 8-4 or something right now, Duke is 8-4.
Yeah,
in the ACC. So I think 7-5 is the realistic. But 7-5 and sailing into the NCAA tournament is the difference, is the
right.
Real difference.
I think 7-5 would be about right, and they'd be in a good position. You know, the shame of it is that you didn't get one of those North Carolina-Louisville games. Yeah. Otherwise, you'd be 500, which is, at this stage of the 18-game ACC season, that's really, really huge.
Packy P, given this is one of BK's best classes, do you think it may alter his retirement timeline, given that most feel he has 1 to 2 years left in him?
My initial reaction to that is no. I don't think that would impact him one way or another. I don't think he looks at it that way. Do you?
No, I don't think he looks at it that way. I think we all look at it that way. I don't think he's looking at his retirement timeline right now. I think last year, staying with Notre Dame kind of re-energized him, and we see how long that re-energizing...
re-energeration.
I was gonna try to kick it up for some reason. I think that we see how long that feeling lasts.
Yeah.
I think he's still re-energized, don't you?
I do. I mean, him and his assistants work their butts off.
10-3, he'll still be re-energized. 8-5, he won't be. You know,
yeah.
Undefeated national champions, you retire. There's just bad year, you're fired. Yeah. It's not all up to him.
No, it's not. My point was that they've worked very hard in recruiting. He worked very hard on the close of recruiting, and it showed in the results. But I don't think that has anything to do with Brian Kelly's timeline, what the kind of class that he just signed.
No, because I wouldn't think he's here for the class. 4 years, that's a lot.
I wouldn't think so.
He has said he won't be. That doesn't mean it can't change, but I can't imagine him coaching in 2022.
Right. CNG 15. Who is the coach on this staff most likely to one day be the head coach of Notre Dame?
Elston hasn't been a head coach yet. So he was the first guy that came to mind, but he hasn't been a head coach yet. So he'd have to be like a 60-year-old head coach at Notre Dame, a 55-year-old head coach at Notre Dame. Well, he's, what, 43 probably, if he was a Michigan player in 94?
Yeah.
That's my range. So, now I guess he could be a 55-year-old head coach at Notre Dame.
Don't think that Mike Elston's
I don't, head but he's the first guy. But I don't think that Jeff Quinn, Todd Light, Autry Denson will be. I don't think...
Chip Long?
Chip Long's young enough. Now he has to put a... Go somewhere else first, though. He has to go somewhere else first. Chip Long can't coach at Notre Dame
right now, or in two years.
Brian Posey has to go have success.
And the question
else.
Is not, you know, he this guy's going to succeed Brian Kelly.
No, it's one day, though. Chip Long's got to leave and be successful. Brian Posey would have to leave and be successful.
I think Clark Lee's never coordinated a game before, and I think he's the most likely to be a head coach.
What about Tommy Rees?
I don't know. I don't
never be
I
a head coach. He's in that. It pretty young.
He's 25. I was impressed with Clark Lee the other day. I
was too. Tommy Rees is 25. He's a Notre Dame coach.
So you're saying that he's got a longer time period to become.
You can
head
give him
coach.
25 more years.
Be, yeah, he could be head coach 25 years from now.
I'm going Rees. I'm going with the odds. 25 years from now.
I'm not covering that. I'm sure of it. I don't know. As far as guys that impressed me, I was really impressed with Clark Lee the other day. I have no idea what he's going to call on 3rd and 10. We don't really know that. I think he's... Let's talk about that for a second, though. I mean, forget about the head coach thing, because we don't know per
Fun
se.
Fun question, but we don't know.
No, yeah, it's a good question. But, I think I was impressed with Clark Lee the other day. I think he's got a chance to be a good defensive coordinator. I think he's got the right frame of mind. I think the players like him and respect him, the second part being more important than the first part. But we have no idea really how he's going to coordinate a game, but I thought he made a really strong impression the other day.
I interviewed him in August, and that's how it goes at Notre Dame. If you're not a coordinator, you get to interview them in August. Yeah. And, now he's a coordinator. That's why you got to interview him. But it's August, National Signing Day, and once in the spring. I really liked him as a first-year head coach. I thought he was honest about everything in a way that doesn't, you don't have to be transparent as a coach. But for him to give real answers about what made Tavon Coney a player in his eyes in August, and for him to start by saying, well, he wasn't at the end of the spring. How that played out now is remarkable, because... We thought just, oh, Tavon Coney, good, he's improved. Tavon Coney was one of the best players on the football team. I like Clark Lee a lot, too. I'm just going back to the... You're right, he hasn't coordinated a defense
yet.
No, he hasn't.
But I thought he said a couple of interesting things. And he didn't say, hey, I helped Mike Elko shape the defense that he coached. But I think that that's what he believes, because he was with him at 3 stops beginning... 6 years ago at Bowling Green.
I am really with the Notre Dame crowd now, more so than... I didn't really have a strong feeling on this. I thought if you could find a great defensive coordinator that wanted to come to Notre Dame, it would be okay to change systems. I kind of agree with this call that, as you said, you don't know what he's going to do on third down. Like, Mike Elko was the master of it. Keeping this continuity of this defense with the guys you had coming back was by far the right call.
Absolutely.
And that's going to help him. That's going to help him this year.
I think most people on the outside and inside realize that.
Yes.
Obviously.
I've always felt, when people always say, well, let's keep continuity, I always think, well, can you get the best defensive coordinator in college football instead?
Right.
But that's also not necessarily realistic.
Well, but even if you asked that question, the answer would have been no. You weren't going to be able to do that. Could you have gotten a guy with experience? Yeah, probably. But... you're finishing up recruiting. I think most people under the circumstances thought it was the right choice. And I, my point about Clark Lee feeling like, I helped develop this defense too. And he didn't say that by any means.
Right.
But I think that that's how he feels, and he should feel that way, because, he made 3 stops with Elko, beginning with Bowling Green and Wake Forest and Notre Dame. And I don't know exactly how much Elko leaned on Clark Lee, but... Mike Elko leaned enough on him to keep bringing him to wherever he went, and he would have taken him to A&M as well. So, I think he's a big part of creating the defense that Mike Elko did. Mike Elko, of course, being the architect of it. So I'm very encouraged by that.
So 2040, Tommy Rees, Notre Dame. CMU Pens fan. What do you believe Ian Book has to improve on to give himself the best shot at starting quarterback?
You know, based upon what we have heard, you know, I mean, it's consistency in practice, too. We see the inconsistency of Brendan Wimbush in games. We haven't had an opportunity to see Ian Book that much, but he threw, three picks?
Two bad ones, too. Right. There's the garden variety, you get an interception once in a while. But so, the red zone one and the one against the LSU was a bad read and a bad throw.
Yeah. So, I mean, and those are, from what we understand, those are mistakes that he makes in practice. Right. So that would be, I mean, that to me, that's it. The consistency in practice, making the right decisions. You know, I think he's way more inclined to force something than Wimbush is, because Wimbush is very reluctant to throw something because I don't think that he trusts his accuracy, whereas Book completely trusts his accuracy and tries to squeeze some things in there. So, you know, I think just some, I don't know if I want to say common sense, but just having an on-off button when it comes to you know, trying to be too risky and too dangerous with a throw.
I was decision-making, for sure, for Ian Book, in-game decision-making. And, of course, that, as you said, everybody says that we've talked to at Notre Dame, he makes mistakes in practice like Brendan Wimbush does. So we've seen a couple of them on the field. I also want to give him the benefit of the doubt where you're coming in relief against Miami. Well, Miami, that's the worst interception. That's the one I couldn't remember. Yeah. That was the worst one. I wasn't even thinking about that one.
So that's four interceptions.
Yeah, and those are all the bad. Then three were, that was catastrophic. And then two were terrible and one was regular. So that's not a great track record in 60 throws. But I was thinking for Ian Book, when you come in and you're trying to win a game, and that was the Miami game, and that was the LSU game in relief, it's a different world.
You have to force something,
you have
right?
to do some stuff. Yeah. You're trying to make some plays. So I don't think you have to see that if he's the starting quarterback over a 12-game slate. And North Carolina, I mean, he threw one bad pick in the red zone, whatever. It was his first start. He had a pretty efficient day that game.
And, you know, the thing that he showed, I mean, he shows several intangible things that make you believe that he doesn't have more upside than Wimbush because Wimbush is so physically talented. But I think that while certainly he can dig further into Chip Long's playbook than Brendan Wimbush can right now. And that's probably one of his calling cards as he goes into the spring.
And we may never talk about this position again until late August, the quarterback spot at Notre Dame on these podcasts. So there's really no...
That is the last question we'll get on that before August, yes.
All right, SR5452, what are your playing time predictions or even position predictions for the following? Adey Ogundeji, Jameer Jones, which is the best question on here, Jordan Jenmark Heath, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and Dante Vaughn.
Well, I mean, let's start with playing time.
Ogundeji is the third strong side defensive end behind Hayes and Kareem.
Yeah, so that's going to be really difficult. Jameer Jones, you know, has he really found his position
That's
yet?
Why that's the most intriguing that's, to me. Right, is he the backup part of it. Buck?
Yeah. I mean, I think playing time, Jenmark Heath, I mean, I know he's only really played one game.
He might start.
Defense, but he might start because he was... I mean, at least against the run, he was very impressive and very aggressive and very decisive, which is pretty impressive when you think you're making your first start against LSU in a bowl game. So I think, you know, just on the surface, I'm not sure that we Dante Vaughn's been in the program the longest, but
can he beat out Nick Watkins as a fifth-year senior? Nick Watkins wasn't great, and Nick Watkins has injury issues with tendonitis, so... If Vaughn's healthy.
I mean, I'm not sure he can beat him out without something physically happening to Watkins. How do you feel?
I kind
about
of agree,
that?
But he has tendonitis that bothers him, and he admits it bothered him all the second half of the year. And my speculation was, well, maybe because it's so cold and awful. Yeah. Then he said it was terrible in Miami. So that's tendonitis. That's
right. And, you know, I mean, the other thing to consider, not that, you know, again, Clark Lee is a protege of Elko, but he's going to have his own. He's going to make his own decisions on personnel and who can play, who can't. And maybe he feels Vaughn could have played last year.
Maybe Vaughn needs to put together a full spring and then not get hurt in August to have a chance to.
First and foremost, the health, and then Owusu-Koramoah.
He could win the role. I just don't feel like it necessarily is. He will. Do you?
No, because I think the question was when he came in last year that he doesn't understand defense well enough for us to put him in, so let's not use your eligibility. I doubt that he's going to make that much of a leap.
But we both loved him since we're coaching the team, we both loved him at the line of scrimmage in his film. That we looked at him and thought, that guy, he's got to stay up there. He can't be back in the back end.
Doubt about it. And that's why I thought at least he'd play special teams.
That came down to the end, though, if I recall right. We talked to them, I guess it was, media day was near the end this year in August. And Polian and Lee both said, I talked to both of them, it's coming down to the wire. We have to decide if he's going to be activated or not. And once they activated Jenmark Heath, it was clear Owusu Koramoro wasn't going to be activated.
Right. So, I don't know. I'm really encouraged by Jenmark Heath. Now, as far as position predictions, I don't think...
I don't know where Jameer Jones is going other than he'll start out probably a backup buck, right? Or backup. Well, he was a Mike last year.
He was Mike. Mike.
But Jonathan Jones seems like the... He's the backup of the other position.
Yeah, right? We can sit and speculate about how the three linebackers, including Rover, is going to shake out. But man, we're spitballing here because there's a lot of we don't know where Jameer Jones will end up. We thought Jonathan Jones was impressive when he did play a little bit.
Jameer Jones had a contributing game-winning tackle against LSU at the goal line. In a goal line package inside linebacker spot. Jonathan Jones played really well, in garbage time. So I'm not sure how to weigh those guys. In other words, you're right, we don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, Jameer Jones playing in goal line, that's a whole different story.
Right, that's true. There's no thinking that he just attacked.
That's totally situational and specialization, and which he will probably, regardless what position he plays, will probably maintain that role. But and then Okendiji is... I mean, Elston said the other day, I want to try to find a role for him. So, third.
He's not buried like Tiasa.
He's a guy that they feel has ability. I don't know that they ever felt like Tiasa had any ability. So, we got any more questions, Jack?
No, we're done.
That's going to be it for today. Tim O'Malley will be gone next Monday when we come back, February 19th. But I'll be here with Pete Sampson. He'll be back in town. Pete is making the... making the trip to Denver. Denver and Sarasota. I want his gig.
Maybe he'll come back. Maybe he won't.
I'll
be in Fort Myers. I might stay a little longer.
It'll probably... And we can be sure that it'll be warmer in Sarasota in February than it was in Orlando in December, unfortunately. All right, everybody. We'll be back on Monday, February 19th. This is Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com.